On Sunday, May 14th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bulb starts its Vision Festival 22 coverage with multi-instrumentalist Cooper Moore, this year's Vision Festival honoree. Join us as we get an update from festival organizer Patricia Nicholson Parker and hear a salon exchange from Moore and bassist William Parker. That's Sunday, May 14th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
I want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. This evening, Sugar in My Bowl kicks off our Vision 22 coverage featuring this year's Lifetime Achievement recipient, composer, performer, instrument builder, designer, storyteller, teacher, mentor, and organizer, Cooper Moore. We'll be joined by Patricia Nicholson Parker, who will provide an update for Vision 22, and we'll hear some audio, courtesy of Arts for Art audio gatherer Don Mount, from a salon featuring Cooper Moore, William Parker, and drummer Mark Edwards. We are also in the midst of our spring fun drive, so we hope to count on your financial support this evening. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
I want some sugar in my bowl. America, you have reached your peak at last.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones, and I'm on the line with...
Patricia Nicholson Parker.
Patricia Nicholson Parker, thank you for joining Sugar in My Bowl once again, as it is time! Vision Festival 22!
Yes, indeed. 22 years. How time flies, creating art.
So you want to tell us what Arts for Arts has planned for us this year with Vision Festival?
You always ask me these tricky questions.
Mm-hmm.
All right. First of all, I always like to emphasize what is the reason for it and what we're trying to do at it. Basically, it's all based on the concept that art heals us, that art can inspire us, can move us, can make a difference that is real in our lives. Because it talks to our hearts, that is the place that we move from, all of us, whether we like to think of ourselves as very intellectual, we still in the end are motivated by our hearts. So Arts for Art and the Vision Festival and what we do is based on that. So we are living in our world right now, which is, to say the least, in turmoil. It is in dire need of what art can do. I've been talking to artists all year in different ways, from artist meetings to phone calls, emails, and saying that we need to do something special this year. Every year, Vision Festival is a cry for justice, is a cry for all these things. Every year, it's been completely relevant. But some years, this year, it's different because there's a general consensus that it is more important than ever. I've been going to meetings of activist groups and stuff, and my favorite quote of the year is, I used to be a consumer, and now I'm a citizen. It was at a meeting of a group called Rise and Resist.
The theme for this year, for a just future. Tell us where that came from.
Because we have to have hope. Our present isn't just. There's very little justice in the present. But we have to do what is necessary and possible now so that that possibility will be realized. And we really can't accept anything else. It's for a just future.
Excellent.
So here we are, it's 2.5 weeks out from the Vision Festival or something intensely true like that.
Right, right.
On Sunday the 28th, we have an anthology film archives. We always start with films. That's in Memorial Day weekend. The films are equally divided between social justice and music. It will include the film On the Black Panthers by
Stanley Nelson.
Thank you so much. As well as someone's putting together a film on Cooper Moore.
Who is the honoree this year?
Yeah, the one who will be acknowledged. when we support and acknowledge something really good and strong, it makes it better and stronger. I think this will come back to us as a good thing for the whole community because we're supporting him, because he represents so much that is good in art and in understanding of the world. So that's the second night, which is Monday, May 29th. Carl Hancock Rux is a poet that he has collaborated with, I think, in more theatrical settings.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to do something that night as well.
Along with his compatriot, Hamilton Kirby.
Yes, I think he's a younger DJ artist.
Yes.
Tuesday, we're opening with Yoshiko Chuma's group, Dead End Hey Women. It's a music dance collaboration.
And so that's followed up with three stories?
Yeah, that's Mia Masoka, Joelle Leandre, and Robert Dick.
Yes.
There's a jazz and poetry choir collective.
Yeah.
And that's got a lot of interesting people. Some like Warren Smith's poetry will be there as well as his drumming, for example. Mm-hmm. E.J. Antonio, T.A. Thompson's putting this together, and I don't remember everyone in the group.
It's okay.
It's text and music.
You mentioned E.J. Antonio. There's Rosie Hertline, mm-hmm. Golda Solomon, and Felicia Villanueva, along with bassist Christopher Dean Sullivan.
Exactly.
That's everybody.
Thank you. Then you have Toma Fujiwara's double trio.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's two drums, two. I think Gerald Cleaver's the other drummer.
Yes, it is. Ralph Alessi's on trumpet, Taylor Ho Bynum on cornet, Mary Halverson on guitar, and Brandon Seabrook
is also
the other guitarist.
And then the evening ends with Trio 3, which is a very well-known, well-recognized trio of Andrew Cyril, Oliver Lake, and Reggie Workman.
That's right. All have been Sugar guests. Yes.
So there's a real range here of age and experience and points of view and even aesthetic. Speaking of range of age, on Wednesday, May 31st, the evening's going to begin with the Visionary Youth Orchestra. That I used to only have on Saturday afternoons, the first time they get to be in the evening.
Wow.
At 6. And these are kids from 12 to 18, I think. This is a free program because it's really important that this music and this study of improvisation and study of this whole music that is, I came out of the 60s. I was really alive with awareness and a sense of freedom and the intensity of the moment.
The Visionary Youth Orchestra is co-directed by Jeff Letterer and Jessica Jones. The compositions that they're going to be tackling or going to be challenged with are among the composers, Anthony Braxton, Charles Mingus, Ornette Coleman, and Charlie Hayden.
Woo! And also, Cooper Moore is working with them.
Excellent.
Then we go to some older people, like Matthew Shipp, Whit Dickey, and Matt Maneri. And it's the first time that particular trio, I think, has played at the festival.
Huh.
You can't lose with the stuff they use.
That's
a little quote for those in the know from Reverend Ike.
Exactly. KJ Holmes.
Yeah. She's another dancer improviser who hasn't been seen in the Vision Festival for some years, but she's really powerful improviser. And she's been working with Jeremy Kalstedt for the last few years. That's going to be strong. And then Jason Kawang, Burning Bridge. I think Taylor Hobinum's in that.
Joe Daly's in it, who has been a sugar guest. And Andrew Drury on drums.
Right.
Ken Filiano on bass. Sun Lee on pipa. Steve Swell on trombone. And Wang Gawei
on ear.
Okay.
It's a Chinese stringed instrument.
Beautiful.
He's always incredibly articulate, both verbally and musically.
Excellent.
And speaking of verbal articulation, you have Tracy Morris next with Marvin Sewell. Tracy Morris did the first Vision Festival.
Oh, wow.
He's been here a few times.
Charles Gale returns.
Thank God.
Yay.
Yes, because he's living in Buffalo now.
Oh, okay.
And Yeah, he was the lifetime achievement, I think, about 4 years ago. God gifted him with an amazing musical talent.
William Parker is going to play bass as part of the trio, yeah. And Michael T.A. Thompson is a drummer.
Yes, and of course I can't say anything but the best about and how blessed I am to know William.
Yes.
And T.A. and Charles, the way they support each other is key. Key to the music and key to survival.
Thursday.
The next day, June 1st, there's going to be the second Vision Conference up at Columbia University.
Oh, okay.
This is very important because part of the way things get passed on and understood is if they go through the university setting. And I think it's why this music struggled so hard for any disability and survival, because it didn't have that. It's so important that Columbia University is hosting these conferences. Pittsburgh University is also part of it and is supporting it. And that's important for this music, for the understanding of it. And again, the name of it is The Sounds of Resistance. So it's continuing the theme of the festival and verbalizing it in different ways. And the keynote will be Fred Moten, poet and the scholar and a beautiful human being. Then, actually, the first time I think at the Vision Festival, Odin Pope's saxophone choir.
Yay!
And it's got a lot of people in it. We're very excited about that. And having a whole group of saxophones, it should be wonderful.
You also have Lee Smith on bass, who is Christian McBride's father. And that's for the listeners who weren't aware that Lee Smith is Christian McBride's father. Tom Lawton on piano and Craig McIver on drums.
All right.
Along with all these saxophone folk.
Okay, moving right along.
Uh-huh.
Jossie DaCosta Johnson and Shayna Delberger. Jossie is an incredible dancer, and since this is the first time of her own piece at the Vision Festival, she danced my piece once or twice. Last year she was in my piece. And she's worked with Shayna Delberger a few times.
Shayna is
a bassist, yeah. And they have a great rapport.
Darius Jones returns.
Yes.
Along with his
Farmers by Nature.
Yes.
And that's what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm excited to hear this because I think that anything is possible here.
Yeah.
And Farmers by Nature is
Gerald Cleaver on drums, Darius Jones on alto sax, of course, Craig Taborn on piano, and William Parker on bass. Yay. It's going to be good.
And then
Jesus Papo Leto Melendez is next.
Yes. And I don't know, have you had him on?
He has been our guest, yes. As a matter of fact, we spent a lot of time playing Eddie Jefferson recordings. There's something about the flow of Eddie Jefferson and Papo that's in sync.
All right. Well, I think he's the cat's meow.
He is that.
But his whole background is part of that New Yorican movement that happened back in the day down in the Lower East Side. Great. And then Artifact is the finale for that night, and that's beautiful because it's got Tamika Reed, Nicole Mitchell, and Mike Reed. They're three great musicians.
Yes.
And I know they'll deliver.
And just so people know, Tamika Reed and Mike Reed are not siblings. Their last names are spelled slightly differently.
Exactly. But they're spiritual siblings.
There you go. Friday, June 2nd.
Wait, no.
What?
You're skipping.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Vision After Dark.
Uh-oh. What is that?
Yeah. Vision After Dark, because you can never get enough. Vision After Dark is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night at midnight.
Oh, my.
At New Blue, 151 Avenue C. And so the first night of Vision After Dark will be with Arwan Ortiz and Darius Jones doing a duo.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And it's all at midnight, so you don't have to think about it too much.
Oh, Lord.
But now we're going to go to Friday. Oh, actually, what's not here also, there's going to be, you know, the Artists for Free World marching band.
Oh, yes.
That I've been bringing to demonstrations, usually on a weekly basis, sometimes twice a week. But I have to admit, this month I had to take a hiatus because I have the Vision Festival coming and I'm doing my own work. It's so important to me, the marching band, and it's so inspiring to be at, because you hear this music in the streets at a demonstration and like everyone gets it. It is not far out. It is not elitist. It is the sound of resistance. It is that. Because the hardest thing about living right now in this time with all the crap that's happening is to have hope. And like, we will not be diminished. We will not give up. This music, this freedom, this spirit is going to change things, but we have to embrace it. That's what the marching band's about.
The marching band has pretty much been together since this administration.
Since January 20th.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
The women's march the day before the inauguration. But on Friday, June 2nd, the marching band is going to be in Washington Square Park at around 5:30. People are showing up and everyone's eating it up. They're so thankful for it. It'll be fun.
Cool.
Then at 7 o'clock, we have Chicago Plan. And that's a group with Gebhard Ullman, Steve Swell, and then the Chicago guys, Fred Lomberg-Holm and Michael Zerang. I looked this up. I didn't know this, but the Chicago Plan, I'm going to try to see if I remember it. I think it's about an economic plan that was come up that all the economists agreed that it would really make our economy much stronger and more stable. And it had all these checks in it so that the banks wouldn't screw us all over all the time, et cetera.
Oh, wow.
It would have handled everything. And all the economists at that time thought it was the right thing to do. But obviously the businessmen didn't. So somehow it didn't happen. But if you look up Chicago Plan, check it out. Joe McPhee's dream book. Yeah, Joe is also an angel.
And a former honoree.
An angel being a messenger from the spirit world.
Rosie Hurt Lines on violin.
Daniel
Carter,
yeah,
saxophone,
Daniel Carter.
Trumpet, and flute. Dom
yeah.
Manessi on guitar.
Dom Manessi, yeah.
Dom Manessi.
Yeah.
And Dominic Duvall Jr. on bass, Jay
yeah.
Rosen on drums, and Larry Rollin on bass.
Right. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Then the Fred Moten who's doing the keynote is reading after that.
Yes.
And he's brilliant. Dave Burrell,
Pianist.
Jordan, William Parker,
yes.
William Hooker.
Yes.
Kick
That's
ass.
Fire.
Kick ass.
Yes. Kick donkey.
Well, yeah. Then bass trombone. I think it's their 40th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
Mark Elias, Jerry Hemingway, and Ray Anderson. So this is their big year.
Yes.
So they'll bring that bigness, that largeness of purpose and music and...
Concern for and, social justice.
Right. It's midnight. Now it's midnight.
Oh, yeah.
On Friday night, it's midnight. And who do we see? Faye Victor, Joe Morris, and hey. Reggie Nicholson.
Yes.
That's who's playing it. New Blue, Vision After Dark. And also, by the way, the tickets are a lot cheaper if you're just going to hear the one group at Vision After Dark for those who cannot, you know, just sing. Because
okay.
I know reality is reality.
Sure. And if you can stay up that late, God bless you.
You don't need to sleep that week.
No, exactly. You know, who needs that? Unnecessary.
Yeah, because you're gonna get food for your soul,
right.
for your heart, and for your feet.
Yes.
We need a soul on our feet, otherwise, you know, how are we gonna walk?
Speaking
anyway.
Of all of that energy, Positive Knowledge
mm-hmm.
is on Saturday.
Yes.
Now, is that preceded by something before we continue?
Yes, there is a forum on racism at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
I know that Faye Victor and Cisco Bradley have been holding talks and forums with people on
yes.
this.
Yes.
On the uncomfortable conversation. So now we have, you said Positive Knowledge. That's
yes,
Aaliyah May Thomas and Ijoma Thomas and Andrew Sorrell. Aaliyah May and Ijoma have been at the Vision Festival, so that it's really good that they're going to be able to be here this year. And playing with Andrew Sorrell, you know,
yes.
that'll be fantastic.
Yes.
Then we have Tony Malaby and Matt Maneri again this year. And Daniel Levin for the first time in I don't know how long. That'll be beautiful. Then Evo Perlman with Matthew Shipp
mm-hmm.
and Michael Bizio and Whittaker. I think Evo maybe played once at the Vision Festival before. And David Murray's coming back.
Yes.
With Cahil El-Zabar.
On percussion.
And Jerry Eastman.
On bass and guitar.
There you go. And then there's the finale. Now, the finale is important to me because, well, first of all, I'm directing.
You're involved.
But I don't know. I'm involved. But
you'll be dancing. In addition to everything, you're directing it.
I don't want to talk about it too much because I want it to be like this surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But
see, I'm just reading what people would see if they go to the website. This is not giving anything away.
Yeah, this is not. So I'm going to give a little away and just tell you that what I'm trying to do with this finale is make sure that everyone leaves feeling really empowered. Really, because this is a long, we need to keep hope alive,
right.
You know, and we need to stay strong.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to realize that no one can defeat us and take away anything from us, that we don't give up. So we cannot give up. We must stay strong. We must survive. We must be full of hope and really joy and other freedoms and our own ability to be just and good. And spreading that and knowing that it's something that we can really change it. We can fix it. I want people to leave the festival feeling really fantastic. And so I asked Oliver Lake and William Parker to write the music. And there's going to be a vocal choir and everyone stellar, stellar, stellar.
Right.
And some of the musicians and this are also from the marching band.
Yes.
I brought them in to have that because they've been live doing it.
And there will be live video art from Bill Mazza.
And then there's going to be healing workshops in the afternoon where people can get acupuncture. I mean, it's an intensive. It's like we tried to make every aspect of the festival be something that's going to make you feel strong and empowered and that people will really have a great experience. The detail of that is where draping the space to improve the sound.
Oh, wow. And the space will be at Judson Memorial Church,
Memorial
55
Church.
Washington 55. Square South. And since everything will be still at Judson Memorial Church, you will also have the marketplace in the downstairs.
Yes, and that's where the healing things will happen in the afternoon.
Right.
So even the market is actually important in the way we design it, and we're put more energy into it this year to make it function better. You
and
know?
There are edibles down there, too. You have something to eat.
Oh, yeah. We feed you. We're getting ready.
So if you missed any of this information, you can go to artsforart.org/vf22.html.
I'll see you soon.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Patricia.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Ha ha ha!
Cooper Moore are my two grandmothers, Granny Cooper and Granny Moore. Granny Moore, her daddy was like a Native American and her mother was like a French Canadian. And then they married in Virginia, white and Native. That's illegal. But where they were on the other side of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Between the Blue Ridge and the Appalachian Mountains, that was wilderness. Nobody cared who married who. They did whatever they wanted to do. That valley, which goes all the way from northwest to Georgia, all the way up to Quebec, that's like a total mixture. So Granny Cooper and Granny Moore, they never spoke to each other. They lived four blocks away. Granny Moore was holy, 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 church woman. Okay, and Granny Cooper, my father called town slut. Okay, she was a bootlegger. She said she had no use for a man. Okay, and she had six children by six different men. She had a rooming house. She was a party girl. They never spoke. My father's mother did not want him to marry my mother. When they did get married, my mother moved into my father and, you know, their house, the granny and granddaddy. And my grandmother didn't want it. A year later, she got up in church and testified in this Black Baptist church, crying to the congregation, the community, saying, "I want to apologize to my daughter-in-law. She's a better daughter to me than my own daughters."
Wow.
Went right to the heart, you know. Now, before the last 30 plus years, I was not a good person, and I did not treat women well. And when I came to New York, I said, I'm not going to be that person. And I'm going to take the names of my grandmothers, because who can be bad in front of their grandmothers? You know, when you're with granny, you're going to be good. Oh, you're so nice. So that's me. And the last 30 plus, I've tried, and I tell Doreen, I get up and I try to be a good person. Doreen?
Yes.
How's it going? Am I... William understands that nobody who plays this music is sane. You cannot be sane, not the way sane people are sane. You cannot be sane and do what we do. What we do is special. And some of us are very lucky. William understands, because so many of the musicians who play this music, they're ill, or they're sick, or they're gone. Okay? William is one of the people who goes and takes food to them. Okay? And goes and visits them in the hospital. There's no way that we can play this music and be sane. And what we have in our lives is that we have love in our lives. You know? We have homes and family and people who understand who we are and what we need. We have love and we have safety. When I go into William Parker's house, it's love and safety. You know? So William... So 30-some years ago, some guy comes along and says, "Hey, I like that instrument. Come down to the bass shop." And I went over there, and they said, "I want you to play the amp that we have there." And I walked in, and I plugged my Diddy Bow into the amp, and it was like heaven. I don't know what happened to that amp, but I sure wish I had. So, and I'm going to play the Diddy Bow now.
All right.
I see a 4-string bass, I see 6-string, I see a lot of strings, but the diddly bow is 1 string. Those of you who don't know the instrument or know me playing this, this is very special. In fact, Sprocket supplied me with this string. This is where I buy my diddly bow strings, it's David Gage's. All right, so this is the 1 string, it's a D string, an upright bass string, tuned to C. I'm going to play it for you a number of different ways. I'm going to play it for you just with sticks, and then I'm going to play some funk and stick and fingering with my thumb and hand. Okay? I'm sorry those who aren't up front and can't see what I'm doing. Thank you.
listening to Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. My name's Joyce Jones, and what you're listening to in the background is an improvisation from an Arts for Art Salon recorded by Don Mount. Cooper Moore on diddly bow, one of the instruments he created. A diddly bow sort of sounds like a bass. And before that, we heard Shift from David S. Ware, Cooper Moore, William Parker, Muhammad Ali from Planetary Unknown. This is a 2011 Fidelity release. David S. Ware on saxophones, Cooper Moore on piano, William Parker on bass, and Muhammad Ali on drums. Before that, we heard Spatter Matter from Triptych Myth. That's Chad Taylor, Cooper Moore, and Tom Abbs. This is a 2004 Hopscotch Records release. Chad Taylor on drums, Cooper Moore on piano, and Tom Abbs on bass. Before that, we heard the title track, America, from America. That's a Cooper Moore and Asif Shahar duet. 2003 Hopscotch Records release. Cooper Moore on piano, diddly bow, banjo, mouth bow, drum skins, and cymbal. Asif Tahar on tenor saxophone, bass clarinet, classical guitar. And of course, we opened our program with our theme, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl by Nina Simone. This is from a compilation, The Very Best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967-1972. This is an RCA BMG release, originally recorded in 1967. This is a 1998 compilation. As mentioned, this is the Spring Fun Drive for WBAI. Please give what you can by going to give2wbai.org or calling 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Or you can text to pledge. Just enter 41444 and text WBAI. That's the number 41444 and text WBAI. Stay tuned. Our On the Bandstand segment is next with our associate producer Hank Williams, right here on Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
the tremolos. Some blues.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for May 14th. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bow guests, so you can see them live. And this week's guests, Cooper Moore and William Parker, and festival organizer Patricia Nicholson Parker, are at Vision Festival's opening night at Judson Memorial Church on the 29th, and the festival runs through June 3rd. We'll have more details on that at the end of the segment. Right now is normally the time when we go into the shows of the week, and we'll do that in a moment, but WBAI Radio's starting its spring fun drive and needs your support to stay on the air and keep us on the air. There are three ways you can give. You can call 516-620-3602, that's 516-620-3602, or pledge online at give 2, that's the number 2, WBAI.org. Or simply send a text message to 41444 and enter WBAI as the message in your text. You can pledge as little as $5, or consider becoming a sustaining member with a monthly pledge. I'll repeat all that after our listings, and we do have listings for you this week. We start with WBGO Radio, which has a visual art exhibit featuring works produced by musicians. It's on view at their studio in downtown Newark, New Jersey, and features the work of Will Calhoun, Mino Cinelu, Dick Griffin, Oliver Lake, Carmen Lundy, and many more. Director John Scheinfeld's John Coltrane documentary film, Chasing Train, is held over at the IFC Center in Manhattan through May 16th. See our blog for a review of the film. Pianist Harold Mayburn leads a trio at Smalls on the 17th. Sugar and My Bolos and percussionist Joyce Jones is at the Harlem State Office Building on the 19th for a Malcolm X tribute with the December 12th movement. Event details are on their website at d12m.com. Pianist Onaje Allen Gums is at Sis's Place in Brooklyn on the 20th. Saxophonist Ravi Coltrane and harpist Brandy Younger are at the Knockdown Center in Queens on the 21st for an Alice Coltrane tribute as part of the Red Bull Music Festival. Ravi's also at Birdland from the 30th through June 3rd. Looking a little further ahead, drummer and percussionist Bobby Sanabria is at the Blue Note from the 25th through the 28th with Larry Harlow's Latin Legends. Poet Carl Hancock Rux is at the Jazz Gallery as part of Joel Ross's Being a Young Black Man on the 26th and 27th. Saxophonist Oliver Lake leads an organ quartet at Smalls on the 27th. You can also catch him at the Vision Fest on the 30th and June 3rd. Bassist Alex Blake is at the Blue Note with vocalist Julie Yee on the 29th. Saxophonist Gary Bartz is at the Blue Note on the 30th and 31st with pianist McCoy Tyner. The big event is this year's Vision Festival. It starts on the 28th at Anthology Film Archives and moves to Judson Memorial Church from the 29th through 3rd with nightly performances of jazz, dance, poetry, and visual art. In addition to William Parker and Cooper Moore, you can see drummer Hamid Drake, poets Carl Hancock Rux and Jesus Papaleto Melendez, Trio 3 with Reggie Workman, Andrew Surreal, and Oliver Lake, and saxophonist Charles Gale and David Murray, and many, many more. We'll have an in-depth preview up on our blog very soon. WBAI Radio returns this year as a proud media sponsor. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarandmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news, and Sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website. And if you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too. We'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. And if you really like what we do, please help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can, and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge at 516 720-360-3602 while we're on the air, online at give2wbai.org, or better yet, text a few dollars in support, and you can send a text to the number 41444 and enter WBAI as the message. We'd really like to see several listeners send texts in support of the show, and it sends a strong message to management that you support and want to hear jazz on the station. This is Hank Williams signing off with our bi-weekly schedule. We're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on Sunday, May 28th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
Hello, this is Hugh Masekela in New York. You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. Don't lose your mind. Don't move that dial. Don't groove to anything else.
Y'all, a lesson. Diddy Bow is something that slaves play. I just take it up a notch. It's actually a zither, since we're in that kind of a place. Because it's one string, a monochord, with a bridge and a bridge. It's a zither. So it's like the beginning of the piano. It's the first piano. That's all I think. Before there were the many, there was the one. In the beginning, there was the one, right? From all of the one comes all of music. And that's how I think. When I play, I think of this thing. This is thing that, in the physical, that demonstrates to me that all of music is in the one string.
What got you attracted?
My dear friend Mark Edwards, along with David S. Ware and some other people, came to New York City back in 1973 with a band called Apogee.
We'll be right back.
place, right?
Right.
And that's what we were the real new cats on the block. You know, we were the young lords, and we were going to give them all hell. Okay. What happened was that I'm a piano player, and David Esquire is a tenor player. So David wants to see his tenor, so I didn't have a band anymore. So Jimmy Hopps, drummer, great drummer, was living with us right up the street on Canal Street, down by Hudson Street. And he said, this is an opportunity for you. I was very depressed. No, I was depressed. I didn't have a band. We came to New York. I didn't have a band. And they're with the master. And I'm just with me. Jimmy Hopps came and he sat with me. Every day he sat with me. And we would draw pictures and paint with watercolors and magic markers. And I didn't know that he was giving me therapy. I didn't know that. I was depressed. No, that's the truth. I'm telling you the truth. Okay? He was a shaman. I mean, he's still alive. He's living out in Colorado. He was fixing me. Okay? So then one day I was walking down Canal Street and I got to Canal and Green and there was a bundle of wood there. And I picked up that bundle of wood and I took it back to my fifth floor studio and I was kneeling down in that bundle of wood. And Jimmy Hopps, who lived in a little closet on the fifth floor, was walking by me with that, kneeling by the bundle of wood. He said, that's your future. And he went on in his room. You asked me, this is how this stuff works. And that day I built my first instrument. Okay? That was May 1974. Between May and August, I built maybe 20 different kinds of instruments. And then in the end of August, he came to me, he says, gather all your instruments, you and Alan Brothman, gather all the instruments and come over to this recording studio over on Green Street. So I did that, got a cab, took them all over, and when I walked in, it was Howard Johnson's tuba band was recording. And after that session, we took all the instruments in, and then Joe Bonner, who had been playing tuba, ended up grabbing my harp. I had a lot of instruments. And then Cecil McBee was there, and he played my twanger, a different instrument. Then Cecil McBee's son was playing, and Alan Brothman, Jimmy Hopps, David S. Ware, cellist Ronald Lipscomb, they all took these instruments and they recorded. We recorded for 3 hours. Took all the instruments back to the crib down the street, and I said, what was that, Jimmy? He said, that was your session. And I said, well, who's going to pay for it? He said, I'm calling Roberta Flack right now, and Roberta paid for it. I'm telling you the truth, how stuff works. But I didn't build this instrument until, very depressed, I left New York, went back to Virginia. First week there, my Volkswagen bus, which I'd driven all around the country, broke down in front of my house. So I took the emergency brake cable, which went from the front to the back of the bus. I took it out, and I put it on a 7-foot 2x4. And I hit it, and I said, what is this thing? I don't know what's going on, but something is moving me to do stuff. And I'm hitting, and then I put a pickup on it, and I beat it. It didn't work. And then I got a job at American University playing dance classes. And while I was there, a man came to me. He said, I'm looking for an instrument, a bass instrument. And I said, I think I've got an idea. So I had an electric bass string, and I made one for him. And he started to play. And I said, oh, I can do it better. You know? And I went home and made me one. But it wasn't until 10 years later, I was playing on the street down Broadway near City Hall, in front of the Federal Building. I was playing out front, making a hustle. And this woman comes. She says, stay right there. I'll be right back. And she brings her husband back. Her husband was a sergeant on the police force. And he took his wife every Wednesday when he was off duty. He was into street musicians and guys, people who played in the subway. And she said, he just carries me around every Wednesday, holds me around all over the city, listening to street musicians. And he said to me, hey, buddy, that's really interesting. But you know, you can make a lot more money if you make it look better, because it was just a boy. Because people will pay you more money if it looks good. I was making about $30 a day. The next day, I made $75. Okay? And because of that, I started working the instrument. And I said, I can make money playing. And I realized nobody else was doing it, so I had a niche. You know, I had a niche in this, on the New York. Now, William, we don't often have an opportunity to
to explain how this stuff works. So I'm walking down the street, because I've been working this thing, okay? And Charles Gale comes up to me. He's, you know Charles Gale?
Yeah.
Okay. Charles comes, he says, hey, Cooperman, I'm looking for a bass player playing at the Knitting Factory tonight. I said, man, Charles, I play, what do you mean? You piano? You? I said, no, I play bass. He said, what kind of bass? So I said, I play diddly bow. He said, well, what's a diddly bow? I said, he said, no, man, it's got to look like a bass. So he needed that shape. So what that said to me, even the hippest cats aren't always so hip. And then I thought, wow, this is a good thing. I have something to prove. So that's when I really started playing this. I only brought this. I have lots of different instruments. They're all over the place. They're like children, you know. You have to give them all attention. Now, I'm going to play piano. Now, don't get disturbed by all of this, because sometimes I play piano for people. Just play for y'all, because my life has been, you're supposed to play for the audience. But I'm going to show you what I do now when I play piano. And it started, William, back in 1970. Because when you go to hear me play piano, William, with anybody else, you listen for these things that I'm going to show you tonight. This is maybe more of a workshop than a performance. What I realized was that when I was growing up, you learn changes and harmonies. The triadic harmonies, and then I heard McCoy Tyner with Train back in, way back, you know, and I said, wow, can I ever play that? And when I understood what he was playing, which was like quartals and fifths, you know, that kind of stuff, yeah. Taught that we have to find our own thing. I've learned a lot. So I said, well, I can't do that. He's doing that. And then back in 1969, I got a commission to do a choral piece with musicians at Boston University. So I said, I got to come up with something different. So I said, what about seconds? So I said, well, here's seconds here. And, you know, you make a second into a ninth. You make it into a seventh, you know. Those are major seconds. Then you have minor seconds, which can turn into major sevenths or ninths. So I said, I'm going to work that. So that's what I've been working the past 30-some years. I've been working seconds. So when you hear me play, so I'm gonna. You hear all those kind of elements. I'm gonna play for you now. You hear this? Hear this? So I'm gonna play. Oh, I left out one thing. And then what happened was 2012. I went out on the road with Mark Rebo. You know, Mark Rebo pays a lot of money. So I made a lot of money when I went out. And I came back, I bought me a nice expensive keyboard. And then after I worked and worked, and then I went in the studio because I had money from Mark Rebo. So I went in the studio and I recorded. And using the seconds, okay, and my dear friend Adam Lohr was there recording me, and it's all documented. Then I realized that I had heard these sounds before when I was a little boy. And there was a man named, what was his name? Gene Quickly. Gene Quickly grew up with my parents in Virginia, and he played piano. But when he was, I guess he was like 13 years old, he had to leave town because there was no high school for black people. So he had to go to the city and go to high school. But when he became an adult, he came back. And my parents, when he walked through the door, they were just smiling and happy. And my father said, come play for my son. And this man walked into the room where I had piano, and he played. And this is how he played. Thank you. like that, it's been in me for all these years. I've heard it. So I told my father when the man, I said, he's playing all wrong, Daddy. And he said, no, because this is a time when there was no PAs. And they were playing like barns and joints. And if he didn't play like that, if he played like this, then no one would hear him. And people wouldn't want to hear. They had to hear some stuff, you know. That's what. So you're going to hear all that stuff now. Tonight, so I'll play a piece that I recorded with Triptych Myth some years ago called The Beautiful. This piece, The Beautiful, was dedicated to who's the Mexican woman, the painter?
Frida.
What's her name?
Frida.
That Frida. Thank you. Now, I'm going to tell a little story about Rem Parker. Rem Parker, he has a better memory than I do. I first met Rem in the summer of 1973 at a rehearsal over in the firehouse on East 10th Street. Tell that story.
All right. Well, I've been playing with a saxophone player named Mudon Slaughter.
He owed me money.
From Chicago. And Mudon had this, he would play the saxophone, but he had this backward bend. And so he would bend way back, almost like he was, like a reverse junkie kind of thing. Then he'd go back forward, but he'd do this rocking thing. Uh-huh. He was so happy, he said, Gene Ashton's coming from, he's going to rehearse with us.
I used to be known as someone else.
Right. But in any case, so
it helps, you know, when you owe IRS and all those people, change your name, you know.
Now, I don't remember who was the drummer. That was that.
I don't know.
It could have been Phil King. Phil King was one of the Mystery Zone drummers from the Lower East Side.
What's Mystery Zone?
Well, that's Mystery. A Mystery Zone is a guy who you don't really know how he learned what he learned. It's like a shamanistic world. They call it a Nelly.
Huh?
A Nelly is somebody who's just born, and then they can play and do what they do. Sun Ra was a Nelly.
Yeah.
Also, Henry Grimes is a Nelly.
Whoa.
But anyway, Phil King was a Nelly. So we're at a guy's house. He lived in a firehouse. His name was Juice.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Glover. You might have heard him play a resurface. And we play there. I'm just giving him a little background.
Yeah.
It was on 11th Street between B and C. And was out of the time I was walking from the... It's not about me, but I just give you this as background. I was walking from the Bronx down to Manhattan. And my first stop when I got down to Manhattan was the firehouse with Juice. So it was around like 1 o'clock. We had already done something. So he said, oh, Gene Ashton's coming. Gene Ashton's coming.
This is a date, right?
It was in the daytime.
Yeah, yeah.
So you want me to tell him note for note what it is? Because it was a little like so.
So here,
Cooper gets there.
We start playing his music, and then he stops me. He says, now, I want you to do this. I want you to play like so-and-so. And I said, because this, I was very arrogant back then, you know. I said, don't tell me how to play. And I got angry. Did I break anything? I don't know.
No, but you told him his music was notated wrong.
Oh.
And we were playing his music and his father's music. He said, this music is notated wrong. And Mudon was like, he was shocked. That never happened to him before. But I loved it. Because the guys from 501 Canal Street, they were like the heavy-duty guys. I mean, because they were...
David S. Ware.
David S. Ware, Cooper Moore, Mark Edwards, David Sapra, Alan Brockman. Then the other segment was William Hooker, who was walking around with a big afro and a long beard and an overcoat in the summertime. And he was walking around.
He didn't live with us.
No, he didn't live with you.
We wouldn't let him in.
But he was one sanction. And then the other one was Ensemble Muntu with Jameer Moondock and Arthur Williams and Rashid Sanam.
Oh, yeah.
And so you had these three satellites, but they were the heavy-duty guys.
Heavy
duty, because they went right to the Holy Ghost. See, they didn't spend, you know, like Jameer, we were still writing tunes. But David and Mark and Cooper Moore, and when they had Dave Sapra, they went right to the Holy Ghost.
Well, you understand that Mark Edwards was the motor. See, everybody understood their role in the band, and there was no giving up. Here's a story. In Boston, we're playing at the Black Avant-Garde, which was like a coffee house under a church.
Don't tell that.
No, I'm going to tell this. It's a beautiful story. It goes to the point. We're playing, the three of us, we're playing. We're pushing. David, we're not, all of a sudden it's just David and me. And then we finish and we look around and he's unconscious. He's on the floor. That's how hard he played.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? That's how hard he played. And we had a rehearsal space, and we would rehearse 3 or 4 hours in the morning, and then he and David would go to work, and then we'd come back in the evening, and we'd play and play and play till after midnight. We did this every day. And then, when we came to New York, we thought everybody was doing that. That's the truth. We thought everybody was doing that. But everybody wasn't doing it. And we found out that there were a lot of half-stepping. You know?
Yeah. It was a transitional period from 1972 moving to the 1980s. And what happened was, Chicago, Los Angeles, and St. Louis musicians came in. They were playing some other kind of music. They were playing...
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'll tell you... All right, we tell them the truth here today.
Tell them the truth.
Okay. They were intellectual. See, when we came around, Lester Bowie would say, here comes the Wild Bunch. They don't know when to stop. They play for 3 hours without stopping. Can you guys can't make any money playing 3 hours without stopping? And then they told some other saxophone players that they need to play some standard tunes. But they didn't mess with Frank Wright. Frank Wright would go off on somebody, and he continued to be the rev. But other people brought their sounds in, and they brought their thing, and they tried to be European. You know, these guys coming with this European stuff and composition and, you know, all this stuff.
But you compose. I compose.
Yeah, but everybody can compose. Cecil composed, Sun Ra composed. They're not the only composers in the world. Anybody can compose some music. No. You know, we all compose music, but I'm saying you compose music, but you also know about the Holy Ghost. Meaning that you compose the music, but you don't reject the Holy Ghost. That's all. But anyway, these guys were heavy duty, and we highly respected y'all. Certain musicians come to 501 Canal Street and leave when David started playing. Mm-hmm. They left.
Mm-hmm. Why would they leave?
Because they couldn't deal with it.
They couldn't hack it.
They couldn't hack it. But it was heavy duty because it was really connected to the spirit, and those of us that heard it loved it. And it was very inspirational. And then you learn more and more and more about the people. Well, I learned, you know, I played with David after that period and just learned more and more and more about him. But I also learned more and more about Cooper Moore when I found out about the Ashimba.
The Ashimba.
Which was that bundle of wood,
yes,
that he found and put it together and made it into a marimba, but we called it Ashimba.
The Ashimba has 11 bars. And I say to people now, when I started building the instruments, they started informing the piano because they were simple. They were limited, one string, okay? It really grew my imagination, the 11 bars, or the mouth bow, the one string. It made me think of the piano differently. So now when you hear me playing, because I'm thinking of it as one string now, okay, that talks like the diddly bow talks or the mouth bow talks. So when you hear me play, that's what I want you to understand, that the piano is being informed by the instruments. And when you hear me play the diddly bow, it's been informed by the technique that I learned as a piano player. Left hand, right hand, bass lines, melodies, harmonies, tremolos, etc.
And the fact that this year, Cooper Moore is being honored, I mean, I think that he's really a multi-dimensional person. And I mean, musician, a composer, an instrument maker.
Stop a moment.
What?
You know, when I played that pretty thing, The Beautiful, earlier, The Beautiful came from a piece that Marlies Yerby directed that, who wrote that? Lori Carlos and Carl Hancock Rooks, the two writers. And that piece was really the theme song for that play.
And the Nativity, I mean, there's so much stuff that he's done that people
Black Nativity.
Don't
you worked
know
on? No, we worked on, what did we work on? A Darker Face of the Earth, a Rita Dove play. That was important. We was at the Guthrie Theater, and Marlies, you did the choreography for them. So I didn't know how much to ask, the money-wise, you know? So the money man from the theater called me and says, he said, well, Cooper, how much do you want? I said, he said, will 9,000 be okay? I said, that sounds a little low. I said, what about 10,000? He said, you want 10,000? That's what you want? But later on, I found I didn't ask for enough, did I, Marlies? Now you can continue.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
There was one Thanksgiving, I was...
Where were we? Where?
When I was living on Garrison Street.
Boston.
Yeah, in Boston. We hadn't moved to New York yet. But it was Thanksgiving Day. So a neighbor of mine said, Mark, since you don't have anyone, why don't you come and have a Thanksgiving dinner with me? So I ate some food. Then no sooner than I finished eating, Cookamore called me up. Said, "Mark, come on to my house and have Thanksgiving dinner." So I'm full. So I said, "What am I going to do?" I said, "I'm going to wait a couple of hours and let some of this food digest, because there's no way I can eat any more food right now." So I let three hours go by.
But were you eating vegetarian? Were you eating vegetarian at this other place?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the funny part is when I got there, Cooper Moore said, "Man, it took you forever to get here. I called you up at such and such a time, 2 o'clock, and here it is, 7 o'clock, and you just now getting here." I said, "Let's eat."
Oh.
So I'm still full. I don't really want to eat. So David sees me. Yeah, David that's where sees me taking some food. I'm taking very little food. And David sees that. "You can eat more than that." And he filled up the plate with food. I was miserable.
I never heard that story.
But I remember it.
Again, I'm very humbled. Very humbled. In the vision, I'll be playing in 3 bands that night. I'll be playing with In Order to Survive. I'll be playing piano. Wim's band with Rob Brown and Hamid Drake, and I'll be playing piano. I'll be playing in Gerald Cleaver's Black Host with Brandon Seabrook over here playing slasher guitar. And Darius Jones. And is Pascal coming? I heard he was coming. Pascal is coming back from Europe to come play with us, along with me. And then the third band is the band I've been playing with in Europe and in Israel. Just came back. It's Digital Primitives with Chad Taylor and myself playing all the instruments. I'll be playing all my instruments. And Asif Tahar playing tenor. And we are going to throw it down. Okay? There's going to be no prisoners. Because everybody on that stage that night is a leader. Okay? And everybody can take it. And we're going to have a great time. Carl Hancock Rux, who I've written a couple of shows with, great writer. Great voice, a colleague of Marlise and myself. And in Digital Primitives is a young man that I've been mentoring for the last 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years. Brian Price has come down to Boston to be a guest with Digital Primitives. Great player, the best multi-win player on the scene, because I trained him. And again, he goes right to it. He followed me around for years when he was at NYU. He would show up with his horn. And then Wim and I were playing in Worcester, Massachusetts at a college there. And Brian came over from Boston. And after that gig, we went to a radio station. There was a party afterwards. And at the radio station, there was a piano. I sat down at the piano. And I started playing a blues on the piano. And Brian had his horn. He pulled out his tenor and started playing. And I said, "Oh, you can play." He said, "Uh-huh." And I said, "But you play old." That following weekend, and every weekend for months after that, he came down from Boston to Chinatown bus on Friday night, and he would go back Sunday night, 5, 6 hours back to Boston, go right to work. And I'll tell the story. He was sleeping on the floor, and Doreen said, "Why don't you build that," my wife, "why don't you build that boy a bed?" And I built him a little couch, and then when he comes down now, he sleeps on this little narrow couch. You know? But it wasn't a thing of he was coming to paying me money for lessons, because that's not how it works. When people say, "Well, I studied with so-and-so and so-and-so, and they pay the money," that's not how you get it. You get it when people put themselves out, and you eat with them, you cry with them. You know what I mean? You go out on the road with them. You go out on the road with somebody. And they're there for you, then you know who they are. And they become part of who your soul and your community. All right? And that's what I miss on the scene. I miss the spirit. I miss the feeling. I miss the camaraderie. That word. I miss it. I miss the living together. I miss the crying together. I miss the fighting. The Asif Tahar and I, when we go on the road, we fight every day. Israelis like to fight. We fight every day. We fight all day. But it's always about the music. It's not about, you know, our attitude. It's about what we're going to do. And at the end, we play the gig, it fights over, and then the next day we start again. But that's what it is. That's what brings the music. That spirit, you know. Is there someone I like to work with? Yes. Because I was thinking about it. This is Mara. Mara who?
Mara Mara Rosenblum.
Piano player. I like to work with Mara. I like to work with, what's that French woman's name?
Anaïs.
Anaïs, who has been singing parts of a work that I've been. I would like to work with those two women and maybe one other woman. I think probably Nyoka Work. I'd like to work with those three, those three people. I think they're special. I like women, and I like talent, and I like smart people. And they're all that, all those three. And sensitive, feeling people, okay? Really feeling people. Those three women, I'd like to do some work with. Maurice and I, you know, we have an ongoing working relationship, you know, which is getting deeper and deeper and deeper. Maurice came to me, called, sent some words to me from Lori Carlos, who passed about a couple of months ago. Lori Carlos is a poet, writer, director, actress, dancer. You know, these were Lori's words, and I set and we performed it for Maurice's dancers and Queen Esther sang, and I played piano at St. Mark's. Beautiful. And that same week, Maurice lost her husband. And so I got to do her words for that piece that Mara played, the music for at the funeral. And those occasions said to me, was that this is why we're here, because we were here for each other. It wasn't some audience we didn't know in Paris or in Europe someplace. This is what I grew up in church. You played things, you played, you created for the community. And that's what we were able to do there. And that really brings us, it makes us whole. This is what we're supposed to do. We are for each other. So thank you, Patricia Park, and thank you, Miriam. Thank you for the Arts for Arts, and thank you, all the people.
Listening to the closing moments of Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening was Cooper Moore, who is being honored at Vision 22 this year. Special thanks to Patricia Nicholson Parker for providing an update on this year's Vision Festival. What you're listening to right now is Stop Time Number 1 from Chad Taylor, Cooper Moore, and Tom Abbs, another selection from Triptych Myth, the 2004 Hopscotch Records release. Before that, we heard Departure from Asif Shahar, Cooper Moore, and Hamid Drake from Lost Brother. That's a 2005 Hopscotch Records release. Asif Shahar on tenor saxophone, Cooper Moore on piano, and Hamid Drake on drums. Before that, we heard from the Arts for Art Salon, recorded by the audio gatherer Don Mount earlier this year, The Beautiful. That's Cooper Moore on solo piano. And we heard two improvisations also from that evening. Before that, we heard a primary piece, number 2, from David S. Ware. Apogee was the name of the ensemble that featured David S. Ware on saxophone, Cooper Moore on piano, and Mark Edwards on drum. We also heard a little story from Mark Edwards at the Salon, and this is from Birth of a Being, a 2015 Fidelity release. This was originally recorded in 1977. Stay tuned for La Nueva Alternativa coming up next. Your last opportunity to pledge during Sugar in My Bowl tonight. You can go to give2wbai.org or calling 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Or you can text to pledge. Just enter 41444 and text WBAI. That's the number 41444 and text WBAI. Sugar in My Bowl will be back on May 28th, the day the film screenings start as part of Vision 22. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Hello. Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.